Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Rosewood Penny by J.S. Fields, narrated by Lynn Norris. Chapter 1. Marani crouched in the blackberry bramble. Thorns tickled her skin, so she sank down further, well out of sight of the road. A contrary branch rebounded against her nose, and she snapped it off, momentarily forgetting what that would sound like in the still night air. Crack! It sounded like her blowing the robbery before it had even begun. It sounded like amateur work, and she'd upgraded from amateur over a decade ago when she'd robbed her first prince with a pointed stick and attitude. She was a damn good highwayman, a damn good guild leader, and at 43 years old, being sloppy was an embarrassment, especially with her little brother right across the road, waiting for her to secure enough coin for tomorrow's food. Marani crushed the branch in her hand, thorns and all, and let the woody shards fall onto her pants. The night was clear, not a cloud or Pegasus in sight, but humidity hung thickly in the air. The right side of her rear was wet from sitting on a purple jelly fungus that looked like brains, and while the road edges were distinct enough to allow a decent view in either direction, the dense packing of hardwood trees meant that she had to keep shooing away small curious predators. The air buzzed with the hum of nightflies. Nightflies and snoring? Marani pushed her head from the bramble and scowled. Jax had fallen asleep, nestled in his own bramble. How he could sleep through the sheer volume of nightflies that swarmed in the moonlight, she had no idea. One of these nights, a fox would bite his nose clean off, and she wouldn't help him sew it back on out of sheer spite. Click-clack, click-clack, click-click-clack. No time for lectures. Marani squinted into darkness. Click-clack, click-clack. She fixed her breathing to the rhythm, moved an arm across thorns and down to her hip to the hollow reed looped onto her belt. This was her favorite part, the anticipation right before the score, knowing some pompous, unsuspecting royal was going to lose their favorite ring or shoes or whatever fine thing they'd thought so important to bring along on a cross-island carriage ride because they were too cheap to book a Pegasus. Peasants walked the road. Marani left them alone. Merchants had solitary horses and sometimes a cart. They knew to toss a bag of pennies the moment she emerged from the bush, and she'd let them pass. Carriages, however. Click, click, clack. Jax, she hissed through the blackberries. The man could sleep through anything. Wake up. Another snore. Wake up! A snore caught in the back of Jack's throat. He gasped, choking on the air, and grumbled unintelligibly. Click, click, clack. Much closer now, the sound rustling through the blackberry leaves. It was the same royal carriage she'd tagged in the morning just outside of Pianto, a city on the outskirts of the Kingdom of Two Spires. The driver had been trying to repair their dented wheel, and a few extra pennies from Marani to the local woodworker had ensured that the wheel's fixing hadn't removed its clacking. The princess inside would no doubt be irritated. Delightful. Princesses were just so entitled. Also pretty, generally speaking. A combination of righteous anger and painted lips that trembled like the world would crack open if they just pouted enough. Marani removed the reed from her belt, the smell of fresh lacquer assaulting her nose. She shifted her weight onto her right knee and extended her arm, snapping off a short blackberry branch and using her thumb to push the berries free. Nightflies buzzed around her, desperate for the juice. She collected the berries from the ground, loaded them into the reed, and waited. Click, clack. Jax! Jax stuttered awake and coughed. It sounded like phlegm and probably smelled like the expensive tea they used to keep him alive. A yellow light swung back and forth across the dirt and bricks, highlighting the insects that choked the air. Marani put the reed to her lips and grumbled at the achingly slow pace of the carriage. She saw the horses first, mud brown with the occasional patch of white, small, useless wings protruding from their sides, and their eyes reflecting the lantern swinging above. The carriage was darker, only one door lantern still lit. The flame shone sickly yellow, the candle having burned down to a nub. One of the horses snorted. A wing twitched. The carriage door came up level with Marani's head. A curtain, black, probably some expensive velvet that was worth more than Jack's life, stuttered in the breeze. Marani took a deep breath through her nose, aimed right at that dusty plush obscenity, and fired. The nighttime split apart. "Gah!" screeched the driver, as blackberries hit with a telltale splat, both from her and from Jax. Thank every frothing Pegasus in the night sky that Jax hadn't missed the shot. He shot again at the horses, and they reared. The terror level was great, but the whole scenario was taking too long. It wasn't so late at night that other carriages might not come by. Marani took a shot at the driver. He swatted at his neck and cheeks at the double assault, pulling too hard on the reins. The carriage stopped, tilted onto its right wheels, then slammed back down again. In the same moment, a woman cried out, high-pitched, indignant, and a smile the size of their future tea stash broke across Marani's face. She broke off another handful of berries, loaded the reed, and fired at the little window. Three blackberries slicked down the velvet whatever, but two got past with a spunk as they juiced on something, or someone, within the carriage. "I lost my peanuts," berated the woman in the carriage, yelling loud enough that half the forest could hear. "Peanuts," Marani muttered under her breath. Jax couldn't breathe basic air half the time, and the woman inside was worried about peanuts. She reloaded and fired, sending four berries in quick succession. "Karn, what is going on out there? Are these berries?" Marani snapped another twig off.
"One moment, princess."
Karn rubbed his neck and cheek, likely smearing berry juice down his coat. The nightflies would love that.
"There are rules on some of these roads. I mentioned that before we left."
"Well, get it done with, whatever it is," the woman commanded from inside. "Tell them we have an appointment to keep, and let's go."
The sheer audacity, ignoring the tolls, like the guild hadn't labored to make road travel a pleasurable experience that cost just a few pennies and maybe a bracelet or two. Had they lost a wheel to a pothole? No. Had one of their horses nicked a hoof on a stone? No. Had they been attacked by marauding feral pegasi? Marani didn't have any control over that, but the answer was still no. She gestured to Jax, her hands low to the road where the driver wouldn't see. Karn hunched over and squinted into the dark forest. He swatted at a fly near his face, clipping his ear.
"Ow, damn this road. You want me to toss the bribe money?"
The woman huffed in the same high-pitched exasperation Marani had heard from every other royal she'd met.
"If no one is there, there's no sense in wasting pennies. Give me another minute before you resume. I'm still trying to find all the peanuts."
Marani made the gesture again, twice in quick succession. Jax shot from the undergrowth, scaled the carriage in two steps, slammed into the driver, silencing him with one very well-placed punch to the head.
"Karn? Who is out there?"
"The locals," Marani said, as she stood and walked to the carriage. She could hear the smirk in her voice and decided she didn't care. "Back away from the door." Jax saluted down at her, tightly curled brown hair falling in his eyes, his cheeks dimpled. On his face, she saw her own smugness mirrored. Royals. So easy, like every mark. God, how were they not all just suffocated in their sleep with their own pillows? She flung open the unbolted carriage door and stepped up. Inside the bare wooden interior sat a woman with unattractive stone-gray hair sloppily braided down her back. Bits of whatever chalk she'd used to cover her natural hair color smeared across her cheeks. Her skin was a fawnish yellow-brown, almost sallow-looking in the light of the interior lantern. She wore trousers, badly fitted, and what looked like a man's nightshirt, which was tucked into the top of the pants like she'd never once bothered to look at how men clothed themselves. She had nothing on underneath the nightshirt, which the chill in the air made very apparent. Her boots were brown, worn, caked with mud,
and much, much too large for her frame. Marani could have fit the entire princess whole into one of Jack's trouser legs. "Princess," she said, nonchalant, tapping the handle of a knife sheathed at her belt. "Welcome to Dragon's Road, part of the United Network of Highways. There's a toll, as you might have guessed." She leaned in, whispered into the princess's ear. "We've changed our procedures, so if you're good, I'll let you keep your clothes. The real ones, which you probably have in the trunk you're sitting on that's supposed to look like a bench." Trunks always had the goods you really wanted. Stealing coins made people angry, but you could sell a nice lace shift for more than a handful of pennies, and people didn't come hunting you over their lost underwear. The princess stared at her. "Hey." Marani shoved the princess, hard enough that her shoulder hit the back wall. "Money, jewels, nice clothes, lacy underthings if you wear them. Whatever you have, I want it. You are currently being robbed." The princess blinked. One of her hands twitched at her side. Marani snorted. "You'd better be reaching for your lip gloss."
Marani?
The name hit like a slap. "My name is Gray. Highwaymen call me Gray. My brother calls me Gray. Merchants call me Gray. You don't get to use any other name except that one." The princess kept staring. Her hand kept twitching. No tiny compacts of makeup appeared, but neither did anything sharp either. Marani leaned back further. Unease sent goosebumps across her arms. She squinted and tried to make out features by dying candlelight. The princess's nose seemed average, button-shaped with a wide bridge. Her eyes were mostly shadows, but the candlelight lit her lips enough that Marani felt certain she'd never been near them before. She'd have remembered the combination of thinness with the come-hither bow lip. The princess's chest had been heaving, which Marani enjoyed for several reasons, but in the space of a word, the color had returned to her cheeks, and her eyes sparkled with tears? The princess reached out and touched a rebel strand of gray hair that fell in front of Marani's eyes. Actual gray, not a dirty chalk gray that a 3-year-old could tell was fake.
"God help me, it really is you, isn't it?"
The princess let Marani's hair fall. It tickled Marani's nose, and she puffed it away while drawing her knife. "Can we get to business, please?" Marani leaned into the princess, bringing the knife to her chin. The princess raised an eyebrow and remained maddeningly silent. "Where's your traveling coffer?" Marani demanded. "Robbery is a serious business, and you're acting like I'm here for tea. Wake up." She put the tip of the knife at the base of the V in the nightshirt's neck, the blade a breath away from the princess's skin, searching for jewelry without getting too far under her clothes. Earrings and necklaces were lucrative, and she was a thief, sure, but she wasn't a rapist, and didn't need the reputation of being one, even in threat. That had been the first thing she'd banned after forming the Highway Guild. Not that any royal seemed to care, and this princess didn't have the common decency to have earrings, or bracelets, or, as she peered down the woman's shirt, even a damn necklace. "Trunk," the princess said. Her voice didn't quiver. If anything, she looked to be regaining confidence, which really was not how this was meant to go. The princess moved to the side of her bench, hooked her foot around the trunk, and drug one end of it forward. "It's not locked." "Finally." Marani kept the knife near the princess's face, got on one knee, and flipped the trunk open. She saw clothes, mostly, as she dug with her free hand. Silk blouses, a few pairs of useless slippers, gold bracelets, which she promptly pocketed. Her hand hit something both smooth and striated and very warm near the bottom left corner. It was wedged under a particularly heavy boot, and Marani couldn't free it with just one hand. Frowning, she pushed a handful of shifts away, trying to get her eyes on the whatever it was. Polished wood, maybe? Mother of pearl?
Marani?
What? Stop it!
Marani straightened and pushed the tip of the knife forward into the princess's collarbone, just far enough to prick her skin and draw a bead of blood. Just shut up and let me do my job.
The princess's face fell, and she bit into her lower lip.
Hey!
Jax thumped on the roof of the carriage as he called down.
What's the delay?
Getting things together, Marani yelled. Need a few more minutes with Princess Big Boots here.
Driver is awake, and I'm tired of restraining him. If you want to hit the next carriage, you've got 5 more minutes, tops. If I knock this guy out again, I might kill him.
The princess, finally, looked worried.
You really don't know me, do you?
No,
Marani said, ignoring the compulsion to stare at the other woman until she figured out why rifling through royal undergarments made her feel guilty. She returned her focus to the trunk, pulling shifts out and tossing them onto the bench behind her. Under the shifts was a heavily embroidered white and green dress. Under that was a map of their island with roads and public Pegasi flight routes inked in, which was a joke, because a common person could save their entire life and still not be able to afford one flight. Then an entire bolt of raw silk. Then a comb. A brown comb, slightly larger than Marani's palm, its tines thick and widely spaced. A comb that caught the candlelight and flickered a bright green, the surface striated and uneven. A comb that had belonged to Marani's mother. An artifact of her childhood that she actually remembered, that had survived the raiders and the fire and the blood. Her parents were dead, their lean-to destroyed, their every possession taken, while Marani hid with newborn Jax in a cave, and the princess had her mother's comb. The guilt turned to something much heavier. It cascaded through her, the sense of wrongness and familiarity. It threatened to choke her, freeze her fingers, stop her heart.
Leave it, the princess cautioned, her voice turned tight and dangerous. It's not yours to take.
It's not yours to keep, Marani spat. Who are you? Princess so-and-so of Duchy whatever? Stealer of combs? Traveling to meet your cousin or aunt or future betrothed under disguise? Because let's face it, the Highway Guild is really damn effective since it got some decent leadership.
Yes, I am traveling.
The princess straightened her shoulders and tucked a piece of hair behind her ear. The gray chalk caked in her hands, which were more calloused than Marani had anticipated, but not worker hands by any means. The nails were neatly filed and painted the color of shells. They had no dirt around or under them, although the hair chalk would fix that in short order. Marani hated the way she moved, so fluidly, so sure of herself, her position, her safety, despite Marani's knife.
I'm Princess Noria of Aspengrove, the queendom on the eastern quarter of the continent. Why I'm traveling is my own business, and I am not giving you that comb.
I have a knife at your neck, Marani reminded her.
But you won't use it.
Noria tilted her chin up, haughty and far too self-assured.
I know you. Your hair used to be brown, chestnut brown, like your brother's. Your skin doesn't darken in the sun. It's always this reddish ochre, except for an irregular spot on your back, just between your shoulder blades. You've had sex with at least 7 women over your life, most of whom are brunette, for some reason I can't fathom, and all but the last one were bottom-heavy.
She snorted.
That one I do get. I also know that you need money for Jack's medicine, and you're not going to kill me, so drop the pretense.
You...
Her knife hand went slack. Way too many bullseyes to be a coincidence. God, not even Jax knew how many women she'd bedded. She wasn't even certain he knew about her birthmark.
You can't.
Noria took the knife from Marani and placed it, ever so delicately, on the floor. Marani's insides prickled like she'd swallowed blackberry stems. Who was this woman?
Marani?
Jax called down. Irritation flashed hot and quick. He wasn't supposed to use her name. Had he already? Was that what had happened?
I, Marani began, pushing as much bluster as she could into her tone. You're going to...
Noria grabbed the collar of Marani's scratchy rabbit fur sweater and pulled until their noses touched. Noria's breath smelled of nutmeg and cider and peanuts. In different circumstances, Marani might have found it endearing. Jax grunted, and Karn's voice filtered down, muffled and angry. Boots hit hard. Jax cursed, and then came a loud pop and the distinctive crunch of a body being thrown into a blackberry thicket. Hot breath scalded Mirani's mouth and chin.
If you want money or medicine, you come see me directly at the castle. Or you go to your Fawn's Pass Inn. This is inappropriate, Mirani. You're better than this.
Nuria's palm hit Mirani's chest as a driving punch, sending her backward, out of the door, and onto the brick road. The surprise of it knocked the comb from Mirani's hands as she fell. She scrambled to her feet, blackberries crushed in her wake. Her reed blowpipe poked into her left thigh, broken into shards of lacquered grass futility.
I mean it, Mirani. This isn't where you belong.
The carriage door slammed shut just as Mirani reached it, comb dully glinting in the poor moonlight, still on the floor of the carriage. The lock dropped. Mirani pulled on the handle anyway.
Let me in, she yelled, very unprofessionally. Give me the comb!
A leather bag of coins sailed through the little curtained window and clinked on the ground. A hand with seashell pink nails pulled the curtain back. Nuria was once again a handspan from her, the smell of honey invading Mirani's nose.
Give it back, Mirani hissed.
Nuria shook her head. In a disapproval, Mirani felt deep in her stomach.
It isn't yours, and the soothsayer was most certainly drunk when she did that reading. What a waste of the one question I'm allowed. Ugh, stupid magic.
The curtain fell back into place.
Let's go.
The carriage jerked to life with the crack of a whip, the horses pulling hard enough to tip the whole thing again. Startled, Mirani stepped back as the carriage took off, clacking down the dirty bricks and coating Mirani and Jax in a cloud of dust.
What? You come back!
Mirani screamed as she rubbed her tailbone. It didn't hurt, but it should have. She licked her lips, felt the grit on her tongue and teeth. The heel of her left boot had caught on the carriage step as she'd fallen and had separated from the sole, leaving a gaping hole. She'd lost her knife too, damn it. And she'd lost her mother's comb. Again.
Who was that?
Jax asked as he dragged himself, silently, as always, from the blackberries.
Want to go after them? Our horses can easily catch up. Well, my horse can. Your pony is going to have problems.
Not if they're going back to Aspen Grove, we can't, Mirani said, ignoring the jab. By the time we walk back to our mounts, they'll have enough lead to reach the city walls before we overtake them. She rolled her shoulders. She remembered the heat of the comb and how it felt as her mother ran it through her hair. She remembered the feel of her mother's hands twisting her curls into futile braids.
Your sense of time is never going to develop, is it?
Jax punched her in the shoulder.
They've got at least 2 days before they get to the border of the queendom. We'll catch them way before then. Their 4 horses are dragging a carriage, remember? We're just 2 people on horseback, even if they're an hour walk away.
I said no.
Blood rushed to her ears, and she tried to ignore it. She couldn't go after the princess. Not just yet. Mirani needed... She needed time to think. She needed time to process. There were too many memories to sort, and if she went after them now, with her blood hot, she'd end up killing instead of just robbing. She scooped up the coin pouch, tested its weight, then pried it open with 2 fingers. The moonlight remained spotty, but there was enough to make out the contrast between gold and silver. Definitely more gold coins than silver, too, and only a single wooden penny among them. Plus, she still had the gold rings in her pocket. It hadn't been a bad haul, but she didn't have the comb.
Gray?
Jax prompted.
Who was she?
A princess.
Mirani shoved the pouch into her left hip pocket and turned to Jax. His face was puffy from dust, berry juice, and, with his luck, probably some stray flower had rubbed against his skin, too. No scratches on his skin, though. He was tough in the ways that mattered, just like her.
It sounded like she knew you, though,
he said.
You met her in a bar before or something? Saba's bar? You do meet a lot of women in bars.
No, Mirani replied. She chewed on her lower lip and stared down the road into the darkness.
Jax, what do you remember about our parents?
They died when I was 8 days old, Mirani. Nothing. You know that.
And the raiders burned everything after them, right down to our underclothes and lean-to. We have nothing of our parents, Jax. No portraits. No bits of cloth. The raiders must have taken some trinkets and resold them, though, because that overconfident princess has one of my few memories. One of our memories, Jax. A comb.
Jax rubbed at a rash on his arm that looked about ready to blister. The pain on his face turned to hunger. Not hunger for the past, like Mirani, but of a dinner long overdue.
If you say so.
Mirani looked up at the dark sky and sighed. A Pegasus, unbridled, unbranded, with a mane of tattered, unkempt moonlight, passed overhead. The whoosh, whoosh of its wings sliced the still air, and Mirani shivered. How could she describe the comb, the way the surface felt on her fingertips, the way it made her think of home, not in a wet cave sense or a wooden lean-to, but a place of dark warmth, a family. Or rather, a family that was more than just her and Jax. It felt like history, and like a legacy, although she and Jax had no one to pass a legacy on to, but it mattered all the same. She needed that comb. Jax wouldn't buy a fool's errand based on a wayward memory, not if he didn't remember the comb. Nor would anyone who worked for her. But money. Castle. That, yes, that she could sell to her band of thieves. Castles had so very many things to steal. And Princess Nuria had invited them. Well, invited Mirani, but surely she couldn't be expected to travel alone on streets littered with highwaymen.
I'm hungry, Mirani.
Jax didn't say it with a whine, but with a deep sigh of a man who'd never once been able to fill his belly. He scratched at his arm, blisters gurgling underneath, but never popping. They never did.
Can we go? Either after the princess or back home?
Mirani needed that comb, and she needed the wealth of Princess Nuria's castle. How long had she dreamed of Jax, surrounded with enough properly harvested nettle tea that she'd never have to worry about his allergies again? A few satchels of gold, and he could go anywhere. Do anything. He'd never need to worry about his next reaction, because he'd always have his tea. Home first. The castle, after we regroup. The princess embarrassed us, smudged our successful robbery rate, and she's got Mother's stolen comb. I'd say it is now the professional obligation of the United Network of Highways to steal it back, and loot the castle too, if there's time.
Chapter 2. They arrived to Mirani's highwayman camp at dawn, Jax asleep in the saddle. Mirani had expected everyone to be sleeping, but a crowd had formed near the biggest cave, where two people stood in the center, arguing. Her family, first her parents, now her and Jax, owned the only private section of the entire common forest, land littered with short, deep caves and terrible soil. The land was convenient for hosting a highway guild, as it had no commercial value, which meant no royals had ever tried to take it away from Mirani and Jax.
Muffin peddlers are shit at thieving. I'm taking River Road. You talk too much, and spook the marks, and the road assignments were bullshit to begin with.
Mirani sighed and slid down from her pony, hands gripping its wing nubs for stability as she descended. In a minute, one of the quarrelers would reach for something sharp, there'd be blood, and Mirani would be down a highwayman, because cuts got infected in the common forest, no matter how well you cleaned and dressed them. She didn't have time to settle petty road skirmishes. She had a comb to recover, a princess to whatever, and she was really, really tired of cleaning up blood. Mirani tried to push into the crowd as the shouting continued, but there were too many elbows and knapsacks and wandering horses, and she couldn't see more than a good handspan in front of her, save the occasional opening. The clearing was littered with rusting swords, piles of crappy horse leather no one wanted, and canvas sacks overflowing with monogrammed jewelry too fresh to sell until the owners calmed down.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?